Andy, how are you?
I'm glad to talk to you, Rick.
I'm glad we found your phone number. You know, the great thing, because you're a famous director, I have like 35 phone numbers for you, but the producer's here.
I apologize.
You don't have to apologize. You don't have to apologize for anything. You live now, and Andy is going to be here Friday. He will be with me and his brother, the talented musician Richie Davis, at the Cisco Film Center to screen what I've watched this, Andy. I got to tell you something. I've rewatched this movie, Stony Island, four times in the last five days. I know, four times in the last 5 days, because it not only brings me back to a Chicago that has mostly vanished now. It is just Andy Davis who co-wrote it, who co-produced it, and who directed it. It's just a great movie, Andy. I got to tell you that.
Oh, thank you.
I got to tell you that. And I think the people who are going to be at the Cisco Film Center, I'm sure a lot of them will be friends of you and your brother. But I think I can't wait to talk to people who are seeing it for the first time. Am I nuts, Andy? Or I still think it still has a remarkable impact. Do you?
Well, I'm too close to it. It's like your first child, you know?
But
I had an interview the other day with a Canadian journalist, critic, and he had never seen it before. And he was just really touched by it, you know, in terms of what we need in the world now about sharing music and humanity and, you know, and the fact that it's got these real kids in there, but it's got a professional quality to it. So it's a strange amalgam of filmmaking. And what's interesting is, you know, I had gone from being a cameraman and wanting to make my own sort of personal movie.
Sure.
And I got to shoot in Chicago wherever I wanted, basically. And then when you look at The Fugitive, there's a lot of the layers of The Fugitive that are seen in Stony Island.
And there's no question. And The Fugitive is generally considered, I mean, to my mind, in the circles I run in, is the greatest cinematic showcase for Chicago, short of some kind of travelogue out of the 1950s. I mean, you really, and that is because, Andy, you don't not only know this city, you love this city, don't you?
Well, I love aspects of the city. Yes, I do love the city. I guess I sort of love the history of corruption and violence and, and labor unrest and rich people just stepping on poor people. I mean, there's a whole history there that's really America, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, but I'm sad, you know, because today there seems to be a lot of tragedy, both in all of America, but also in Chicago, with people killing each other and guns being everywhere and race being a terrible issue for so many people. And so I'm sad. I would love to come back to Chicago and feel comfortable going anywhere and doing anything. And yet I know I have to have new precautions, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think the question of, and one of the things that is a hallmark, I think, of the movie Stony Island is the racial harmony. The black and white Chicago mingles in that movie in such a hopeful, positive, and creative way that I have a hard time thinking of a movie that does that job any more effectively than that. I'm dead serious about that, and I think you'd agree, don't you? It really just...
Well, the funny thing is, there's actually been a tremendous amount of development and history and accomplishment. You know, when I was a kid, black people were not on television.
Right, of course.
They were invisible.
Yep.
You know, when you think of how things have changed with music and with culture and, you know, and sports and politics, you know, Obama was a guy who was working at Alt Guild Gardens and as a community organizer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you know, I could relate to that. You know, we used to, Bowen High School, we used to play against Alt Guild Gardens.
Sure.
Cazzy Russell, you know.
Yep.
And
yep.
And you know, and then he became a candidate, and he was supported by Chicagoans, and you know, so the whole history of an optimistic time, and you know, now we're fighting a rise of a reactionary turn in our history, and we have to get everybody out. You know, we have to vote. We have to make sure people stand up.
Well, that's, you know, that's a strange thing. You know, when the recent mayoral election, when, you know, less than 50% of eligible voters even turn out. I mean, that will always infuriate and irritate me. When last we talked, and we were telling stories about, you know, Corky Siegel and Mike Bloomfield and how literally the folk music and part of the blues boom here was the result of white kids from the suburbs being able to go down to, you know, Pepper's Lounge and even the Burning Spear, which is featured in Stony Island. And music was a common language, wasn't it, Andy?
Yeah, it was. But it goes back to Benny Goodman was the integrated band, you know. But, Paul Butterfield was from Hyde Park, and Corky was from South Shore. So,
yep.
You know, there were some suburban kids. Bloomfield came from Highland Park, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
Winnetka. But it was a whole amalgam. And then other people came to Chicago from, you know, Elvin Bishop, and people came from Oklahoma and stuff like that, you know, and came to Chicago because it had these incredible roots that had come up from Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama up the Mississippi River to develop this new music.
Yeah.
And it affected the world. I mean, there's a documentary about Butterfield and basically, you know, the British guys who became famous all were listening to Chess Records.
Of course. They were down on Michigan Avenue.
So that had a tremendous impact. And then it goes back to jazz and all kinds of stuff. So I feel very lucky that I grew up in a city that was rich culturally and had this incredible involvement. There's a great documentary about Mr. Kelly's.
Oh, I know.
It's about how these two brothers started, you know, letting people, Dick Gregory, tell it like it was.
Yep.
Back then, which was unheard of.
Well, and allowed black customers. I know the David Marienthal, who made that movie, was a guy from Francis Parker, and I knew him as a kid, and it's another movie that really helps define race in Chicago, which has always been, I think, one of the most sort of tenuous grounds, Obama or no Obama, of race relations in this country. That's why I think Stony Island is such a buoyantly hopeful movie, Andy Davis. You may not have been thinking that when you wrote it, but it really.
I definitely wanted to have this idea of this white kid could survive in a black neighborhood and develop deep friendships, which has happened. It was a true story of my brother.
I know.
He's got this band, an integrated band. He's been working with black musicians and white musicians and Romanian musicians for years and years, you know. It's a true story.
Did you ever think, because one of the things, and I'll bring this up because Andy, Richie, and I are going to have a conversation at the Siskel Film Center Friday night after the screening. The screening's at 8. SiskelFilmCenter.org is how you can get tickets. And what I want to ask is, I see that film, and I told you I've seen it like 5 times in the last 4 days. I think to myself, wow. Geez, Richie Davis, to my mind, has real star quality on camera. Do you sense that he's your brother? So I don't know if you're going to admit to that. And he is a talented musician, but I think he could have been a movie star. What do you think, Andy Davis?
Yeah, well, you know, he was very handsome and very mellow. And, he grew up around my parents who were actors.
Yeah.
He was a bit of a ham as a kid, you know. and now we're both bald old guys, you know. I don't know if he'd be a leading man today, but he certainly has a way of, you know, it's interesting because his band is the Chicago Cats.
Right.
And they have a website. They're great. And these are studio musicians. And Richie, it's interesting because he's got to deal with all these weddings. He's got to deal with the bride and the groom and the parents and the ethnicity, whether they want Greek music or Polish music or, you know, whatever they're going to ask for. So he's got to be a diplomat. And I think growing up on the South Side and staying out of trouble and dealing with all kinds of people has helped him do that.
Yeah, that he was nurtured as a diplomat. No question. Andy, if you can hang on for a couple more minutes, we'll continue this conversation. Can you?
Thank you. That's no problem.
Wonderful. We'll be back in a couple minutes. And to prepare for this, one of the best things to do would be to show up at the Siskel Film Center on Friday night for the 8 p.m. screening of Stony Island, the 1978 film directed, co-produced, and co-written by Andy Davis, who is on the phone now, born and bred Chicago, and it stars his brother, Richie, who's gone on to a fabulous musical career with the Chicago Cats. You're proud of this movie? And he, you know, I think to myself, like, I wonder if I should go back and read a story I wrote about some saloon in 1978 and what I would think of it. I'm actually going to do that and see what I think. You're proud of this? It was made on a shoestring, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, besides the fact that we had no money to work with,
right,
the people who are in the movie whose careers have blossomed, for example, you know, Dennis Franz, his first movie, he was in the Organic Theater.
Yep.
Susanna Hoffs wasn't even a singer. She was just starting to develop interest in music, and then she started the Bangles. Gene Barge, who was the producer of so many great records at Chess, including Muddy Waters, Electric Mud, but also was producing Natalie Cole. And it goes on and on, the number of musicians and actors who developed. Meshach Taylor, for example.
Oscar Brown Jr.
Oscar Brown Jr., who I loved, grew up with. Anyway, so I'm proud of the fact that we were able to get talented people in this film. And then Tak Fujimoto shot it. Dov Honig, who became a really great editor, cut several of my films. He worked on it. And, you know, it was a labor of love. We had nothing to, there was no money, so it wasn't a big issue about who got paid what. It was, everybody was working for nothing, pretty, basically.
Right, right.
But, you know, we recorded the music live in 12 days. And I think it's got an honesty that can resonate with people today. And I think, you know, going back and looking at the kids in bell bottoms and kids who have their afros and kids who are playing R&B, I think it's timely. Young people can relate to it today.
I don't think there's any question. I cannot wait to see the reaction of the crowd. There's also Ray Dong Chong in what obviously had to be her first movie, right?
Yeah, Tommy Chong's daughter. Yes, somebody at A&M Records recommended her to me. It's this young, beautiful actress who, it turns out, she could sing. You know, and Wendy Barnes, who later went on to sing with Stevie Wonder, is in the movie, and Larry Ball, who became the musical director for all kinds of huge stars. You know, it just goes on and on.
Well, so, but and
the interesting is Gene. There's a documentary people can watch.
Oh, it's wonderful.
AndrewDavisFilms.com. It's called The Making of Stony Island, and it's with Quincy Jones and Chuck D, and plus a lot of people in the cast in the movie, and they get a real insight. And what's interesting is, you know, Quincy talks about the impact of Chicago and the South Side on the world of music.
Sure.
And Chuck D, who's not from Chicago but loves Gene Barge, says, you know, this is a movie that doesn't talk about race.
Yep.
It doesn't deal with race. And yet it's about people getting along. It's like he makes a sports reference. You know, you see a movie always about the coach and the team coming together.
Right.
This is Gene Barge as the mentor who's putting this band together because the kids come to say, will you help us? And he does, you know.
Yeah. No, I think it's remarkable on every – who made – did you make that documentary that's on your website?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a wonderful piece of work. When did you do that?
We did it in 2012. The movie had a short release by another company. And what's really a sweet story, the company that's releasing it is owned by Byron Allen and a guy named Bill Burgos, whose father is actually a limo driver in the movie. He was an extra, and I turned him into an actor. Bill called me up and he says, can we handle Stony Island? So it's going to be available on all these platforms, and it's going to be available on my website also, AndrewDavisFilms.com. And you can go there and see, you know, my body of work, plus you can watch this documentary.
You remained incredibly loyal to Chicago with the movies that came after Stony Island. Was that ever for you difficult when someone said, hey, we'd like you to direct the package or The Fugitive, and you said, yeah, well, okay, I'd be happy to do that, but we have to do it in Chicago? Was that a negotiation at all, or did you just get your way?
Well, it was interesting. The film that really broke the ground was Code of Silence,
which is
an interesting story. How that came about. You know, I was hired to direct this Chuck Norris movie, and I didn't think the script was very good. I hired my friend Mike Gray, who had given me one of my jobs as an assistant cameraman, who later went and wrote China Syndrome and directed The Murder of Fred Hampton. It was a very important documentary filmmaker in Chicago. So Mike and I worked on the script, and it's interesting because Bulldog John Drummond, the great
crime
reporter,
yep.
he told me about this place in the north side that had money on the table every Tuesday afternoon. It was heroin coming in from Mexico, right? and the mob wanted to knock it off. And they said it's too dangerous. So there was a guy named Wally the Wiretapper who was able to bet on horse races after they were over, right? And John Drummond told us about this guy. And it became the story. So I try to take real things, you know, and put them in the movie based upon what's really going on.
Yeah. And some of those, you know, you claim, and I think you rightly claim, Andrew Davis, that the shots of Chicago that have kind of come cliche, that you invented the cliche of the L shots, didn't you?
Well, the cliches are the Michigan Avenue Bridge, you know.
Right.
And Wrigley Building. But I have used that. I used that in Chain Reaction and the Wrigley Building, of course. We used it. It was outside of Tommy Lee's office and The Fugitive, you know. But, you know, it went from Code of Silence to Above the Law to The Package to Chain Reaction to The Fugitive. And so, that's Stony Island. So it's like, you know, this is my playground. This is the city I know. And, you know,
exactly.
In the old days, we had cooperation, you know. It was, yeah, after Mayor Daley died, you know, it was easier to make movies. He didn't want any gunplay, of course, and I was happy not to have gunplay in some of my movies. But and then after we started making those movies, and Hollywood realized, hey, there's good crews in Chicago.
Oh,
there's
no question.
Cool there.
Yeah.
We can do Batman in Chicago.
Well, now there are a ton of TV shows, too, to now start up again. Chicago PD, Chicago Med, you know, all this
right,
other
exactly.
stuff. Did you know when you were making The Fugitive what a big hit that was going to be? Do you know, Andy, as the director, you're orchestrating everything? I don't. You probably don't have time to sort of sit back and
well. There's interesting articles written because it's the 30th anniversary.
Yeah, actually, right. Sure.
On 21st November, on my birthday, they're releasing the Blu-ray 4K of The Fugitive, which is amazing looking. It's remastered and remixed. And the funny thing is, I was just working hard, trying to make it all make sense.
Right,
script needed a lot of work. And I watched James Newton Howard, the great composer, came to visit me. And I was staying in a hotel, and we looked at some cut footage. And I started saying, you know, this could really work. Maybe some old grandma could take their kid to see this, and they can relate to this poor guy being accused of something he didn't do. Harrison Ford was beloved, you know. And I got an inkling for it. But a lot of the producers and a lot of the cast, they had no idea. I mean, they thought this was going to end their career, you know. And then the movie gets nominated for 7 Academy Awards.
I know.
And Best Picture.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tommy wins. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's sort of like what happened to Coppola on The Godfather. They didn't know what it was going to be, you know, and it was a huge hit, you know.
Yeah. I cannot wait to see. Let me ask you one last thing. How long have you lived in Santa Barbara?
In Santa Barbara since 1984. But I moved to California in 72. I moved to San Francisco, Berkeley, and then to L.A., and then we wound up coming up here.
Wow. I'd love to see your place one day, but I can't wait to see you.
Okay.
Well, we will be at Andy Davis and his brother Richie will be at the Cisco Film Center Friday night.
And some of the cast and crew will be there, too. I just want to say to everybody,
yes,
you know, we're from Chicago.
Yeah.
I did not pay Rick Hogan to say these nice things.
I loved your dad as an actor, and we both love Studs Terkel. That's all it ever takes, Andy. Can't wait to see you, pal.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
Bye.